on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this Friday edition of InvestTalk. It's September 18th, 2015. And we're here to talk about money. More exactly, what do we do with it after we've earned it? How do we make it grow on its own? I mean, that is really the goal. You want the money to work for you and not you work for the money, right? I mean, that's the goal. So how do you protect it? How do you grow it? How do you spend it? Excuse me. Comedian Steve Martin talks about money. He said, "I love money. I love everything about it. I bought some pretty good stuff. Get me a $300 pair of socks, got me a fur sink, an electric dog polisher, a gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater. And of course, I bought some dumb stuff too." In other words, how much would you spend on stuff that you don't really need or want after you bought it, after a few days? And I know I've been a victim of that years ago. I buy stuff that you want and that you really don't need. Most very wealthy people are pretty frugal people. Did you know that? They don't buy things to impress people. They don't have to. They don't have the compulsion to do it. That's not what they do. If you ever read, a really good book to read is The Millionaire Next Door. Talks about that, what wealthy people really spend with their money. The Millionaire Next Door. If you can get that book, it's not real thick. It's pretty easy to read and kind of entertaining. Okay, on about every Friday, I skim through the the weekly premium newsletter, which goes out to subscribers every Friday. And the first section always summarizes the market. And, of course, it talked about how everybody was focused on what the Fed was going to do this week. And as you know, we mentioned yesterday, the Fed left interest rates alone. And they probably should have, because I don't see any inflation. And there's really, the economy's not that strong. And the rest of the world's economies are pretty weak, so probably should have. But, you know, we've talked about that. But in the newsletter this week, I said, you know, there's other information out there, other economic statistics that came out this week that no one really talked about much. And, of course, I put that in the newsletter. On the portfolio management side, because there's always four sections in the newsletter, the weekly summary, portfolio management. You know, if you wanted to manage a portfolio of stocks yourself, I've just tried to give you some help and hints about how to do it. Talked about the world economy, China and Europe, and what they've been doing and how that affects stocks and the volatility of stocks. And Consumer Watch, I talked about pet insurance. Pet insurance. If you have dogs or cats, you'll know what I'm talking about, because it's expensive. I have a couple of dogs, and man, I've spent a fortune on those dogs. So we know all about pet insurance. Don't have any. I should have some. I think it's a good idea, actually. And this week's stock ideas, I had a big tech company in there and a big financial institution in there. And my stock ideas are just, you know, to gather ideas of which stocks I kind of think have the basics of information that you, of data, of economic strength that you might consider. Okay? And that's the newsletter. It comes out every week. It's less than $10 a month, but if you want to order, you go to investtalk.com. It's pretty simple. And I thank you for connecting with us today. I do enjoy you coming aboard. Do you have questions or comments about any money matter? Well, I would like to talk about it. You can get through right now, 888-99-CHART. And let's talk to, let's take this question. Here's a question. Emilio's called from Los Angeles. How you doing, Emilio? You're in L.A., huh?
Yeah. How are you, sir?
Welcome back from Greece.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's good to be back. This whole Grexit is on again, and this is on. I'm like, just get it over with.
Yeah, really. Isn't that the truth? Just get out, or either the EU boot them out, or Greek people get out and just move on. You know, something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
my question is General Electric. What do you think? With the oil prices going down, I mean, I know the turbines that, in the business that they're in, I just want to know what, if you think this is a good time or
not. GE is huge, $250 billion company. There's really, it's going to be a solid Big company, paid 3.7% dividend, decent return on equity. Earnings are going to be a little less this year, $1.30 a share from $1.41.
They are, okay.
But next year, it's going to bounce up 18% to $1.54. So I do think GE is a good company to own long-term, and you want to buy it when it's on sale. You don't want to buy it when it's high. You want to buy it when it's low. And this is right. this is a pretty good low price.
So, you think so, huh?
Yeah, okay. but Emilios, I think we have one more downstroke on this correction, and you might want to wait a little bit just to see if we get it. I don't think there's a big rush to get into it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Good enough. Thank you. Always nice to hear you, man.
Thanks for all your work. Thank you, Emilios. Emilios I think he's got dual citizenships in Greece and here in the United States. And he's just been back in Greece for a couple of years. Anyways, what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? Well, we got a number of talking points we're going to discuss. If you don't call me up, how about where's the next ETF boom? Where's that going to be? ETFs have been very, very popular. And, of course, they track mostly indexes or slivers of the market. Is it going to continue to grow? Are they going to expand into different areas? And so we're going to discuss that. Also, I want to talk about the competition for Tesla. The competition out there for Tesla. You know, and if you don't know who Tesla is, you probably live in a cave. Tesla is, of course, the luxury all-electric car who is actually releasing a new car, new model, this month. This month. Did you know that? And another sedan, every man's auto, they call it, or the mass market model is going to come out in a couple of years. And also we'll talk about the stock market recovery and talk about corrections and how long do they take to hit a bottom and how long do they take to come out? What are the averages? What are the statistical numbers on those? And what about different sizes of corrections? Small corrections, 5% or so, and then 10% corrections, 15% corrections. How long do they last to go down and then up? And there has been a study, and I'm going to share it with you. You're going to have to bear with me. I think it's interesting because we're in the midst of a correction now. I want to see what the stats say, and that's why I'm discussing it. And junk bonds. I was supposed to get to this yesterday. Junk bonds, otherwise known as high yield bonds. What is happening with that area? Because if you look at it, they're not suffering as bad as it appears, but there is one sector that is really getting hammered, and it's probably just the beginning of getting hammered. So we'll talk about that. And I got a couple other things, you know, if we can get to. But I get too ambitious and want to talk about all these things, and I never have enough time. So I try to pick just three, even though I got like five here. So that's what we're going to discuss. And, of course, your calls come first, so whenever you want to talk about it. The stock market today took a big dive, down 290 on the Dow, 67 on the NASDAQ, and 33 on the S&P 500. And so yesterday when the Fed came out, the market initially shot up and then came back, gave it all up, and was kind of on the downside, pretty volatile. Today it was all down, pretty much down for the whole day. And volume picked up on the volume picked up the last 2 days on the downside. So the market's coming down, the volume picked up. So maybe we're in for the next leg of the downturn. Of this correction, and no one knows where it's going to go. I don't know. It could turn around tomorrow, Monday. To Monday it could be up. Who knows? I just know. I like to deal with the probabilities, not with the possibilities, because the possibilities, anything could happen. But the probabilities are, you know, what I focus on. What are the statistics? And one of the things I'm going to talk about today is what are the average length of time it takes for recovery, a correction to recover. Depending on its depth and what is the size, how deep is a correction? And you know, if you go back and look at corrections going back long term, what is the average time? And of course, who's to say that this won't be average? I don't know. I can't tell you. But you know, it's always nice to have that information in the back of your head so you can play the probability of something happening. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. We're glad you're here for Invest Talk. Quiz time. We talked about pet health insurance earlier. Remember, it's on our newsletter today. What is the average cost of a tooth extraction? If your dog has a bad molar, what is the average cost? Do you have any idea? I bet you the average person listening to me would have no idea. It's a lot more than humans. It's $829 to remove a molar of a dog. I know that for a fact because I have paid for those. You're amazed. How about teeth cleaning? Teeth cleaning for a dog. $400. Now, maybe where you're listening, maybe it's cheaper, but here in South Orange County, that's what it costs to have your dog's teeth cleaned. Amazing, isn't it? I'm here for you. If you need me, bring any money questions you might have. This is Invest Talk, and our number is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Paul. I'm calling from the San Francisco Bay Area. We listened to the show on the way home. I carpool with a couple of great individuals, and we were wondering what your value is on Autodesk and Bank of America, and if you see what risk and opportunities you see on both of these companies. Thank you.
Well, Autodesk is the developed computer-aided design software applications for architectural engineering and manufacturing products. And the stock has been in a downturn ever since, February? And even before then, it was struggling. But it peaked in February at about $65, and today it's at $46. So you can see it's not having a good time. And that's because earnings are falling sharply. They're falling 43% this year, then another 78% next year. It might be because they're buying somebody else, maybe, but sales have been shrinking in the last couple of quarters. And so the problem is the company is very good. I don't want to give the impression this is a bad company. Autodesk is the premier company in this computer-aided design software applications. It is, they really have no competition, really. But when you're trading that, a huge, when you're only going to make, you made $1.17 the share last year. Well, how much is that worth? 20? I don't think so. 20 PE? That makes it a $22 stock. The stock is selling for $46. Then it's going to make 67 cents this year. 50. Don't buy it. This is not time to buy this stock. It's too weak. It looks way too weak, and the earnings are not recovering yet. The sales are small, shrinking. So, no, stay away from Autodesk. And it has, remember, this is an international company. It's domiciled in San Rafael, but it's just not time to be buying that. The other one was Bank of America. Of course, that's a bank. Everybody knows Bank of America. And Bank of America has different issues, but I think they're much more, it's at a bottom. And it's at a bottom that looks very solid because it's been there several times in the last 12 months and tries to bounce off of this bottom. So I have better hopes for this simply because even though sales have been slowly shrinking, it does look like earnings are about ready to turn. They're going to go up next year. They're flattening this year. But the PE of this stock is 11. So $1.61 and it's a $15 stock, that's going to be less than 10 PE. Much better bargain than Autodesk. Much better bargain. So it would be a safer stock to own. Is it time you reviewed your retirement portfolio? Have you done it? Have you looked at the mix of funds and assets that you have, the various asset classes in your retirement portfolio? Many of you don't have much choices, I know that, but you still have to look at it. I know you, most people don't, but you really should. I will be meeting people on September 23rd at our Dana Point office in Orange County and in Portland. I'll be there next Friday. So if you want to meet with me, and I'll be in San Ramon on the 30th. This is Invest Talk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. There may be a question that you want to ask Steve or Justin directly, something specific about your situation. All you need to do is go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you by email.
So what's going to be the next big ETF boom? I don't know if anybody really knows This is going to be our main talking point today. I don't know if anybody knows what the next boom in ETFs will be. My suspicion, and this article hints at it, might be managed ETFs, like a managed mutual fund, because most ETFs, 99 and 9/10 of them, follow a index or a sector or a grouping of some kind. And it's like almost, they don't buy and sell. They're not actively managed. They just hold on to the holdings and they go up and down. And you, the buyer of these ETFs, manage which ETFs you think you need to be in. But now there's, I don't know, there's probably, I think there was a number here about, I don't know, but there's a $20 billion. Active managed ETFs have gathered about $20 billion, which is still a small slice of the total ETF asset class. And that is that where the next boom is going to be? Maybe not. That's what possibly could be. Possibly. But ETFs are becoming more and more popular. Remember, an ETF is exchange-traded fund. It acts like a mutual fund, but you can buy and sell them intraday on the stock market. Whereas a mutual fund, you can only buy it and get the net asset value of that mutual fund at the end of the day. And when you sell it, you can only sell it at the end of the day's price also. Now, that doesn't, frankly, I think that means it's nonsensical about, you know, just that doesn't help or hurt anything. You know, one day is nothing. So that advantage isn't really an advantage, but I think most people think of it as an advantage because it acts like a stock going up and down and value up and down during the day. It's really not an advantage, you know, over a mutual fund because it's just, there's no difference really on that when you talk about that. Where there is a difference is ETFs are usually less expensive. And there is an advantage. Okay. Remember, each mutual fund and each ETF have a cost associated with them. There is a fee that manages that cost. I'm not talking about the trading fee. I'm talking about the fee that they charge, the management fee. ETFs are usually less. So why wouldn't you want to do them? Well, one reason is you, in a mutual fund, you can get a manager who can allegedly manage the money and maybe get you better returns. Now, that's not so easy to do, and I don't know, the statistics bore out that maybe just owning an index is a lot better, especially in a time when there's very low volatility. I mean, we've had some volatility recently, but since the stock market bottom in 2009, we really haven't had a tremendous lot of volatility. It's been one way up until this year. And I think what happens is managers don't look so great when the market goes in one direction, just so you know. They look much better if the market goes in two directions, up and down, because that's what they're doing. They're trying to manage the risk. Well, if there's no risk because it's doing, the market's going up, there's not, then they don't shine. The manager doesn't shine. He can't show himself to be better than the index. So therefore you buy the index. Just as a, it's a cycle, everybody. So I don't know what's going to be the next big ETF. No one knows. We have some suspicions, but no one really knows. Exchange traded funds. They have become very popular. Yeah, so I like them too. I use them in my managed stock account. I use them. Don't think I don't. I do. So there's reasons to own them. Now, I read today about a billionaire hedge fund manager who wants to work on, and I want to read this article carefully before I bring it to your attention. He wants to work on trying to make, to try to fix income inequality. Somehow to move, you know how it's been reported in the news that there's a lot of income inequality in the United States. And there is. There's no doubt about it. But the people's solutions that I've heard is take money from this part of group of people that have it and give it to this part of people that don't have it. And to me, that smacks of being wrong, unfair. And it really is smacks of kind of being un-American, where you're taking those people who got lucky or worked hard or started a business, you're going to take away their effort, their money for all that effort, you're going to give it to these people who are probably just as hardworking, but maybe not as hard, or maybe just not as lucky, and that doesn't seem right. Well, this guy has a more market-driven solution to try to fix income inequality, and I agree that needs to be fixed. We need to work on it to try to shrink that. But how? How? Without taking money from Party B to give money to Party A here. How do you fix it? Using, and I read the, his, I went read it once, and I'm going to read it again before I talk about it on the air. But yeah, it's a possibility. It's thinking outside the box that I think we need to talk about. This is Invest Talk. Thanks for investing this hour with me. I appreciate it. Benjamin Franklin said, "An investment in knowledge pays the best interest." Can we help you break or help you meet the challenges of managing your money? I'm ready for your questions. Anytime you want. Questions or comments. 888-99-SHARK. Does anybody know who said, "It isn't over till it's over"? Remember that saying? Anybody know who that is? I do. This is Invest Talk, everybody. Charter is our direct, anytime, 24 hours a day number. Ryan called us from Windermere.
I'm 20 years old, and I'm looking for some advice on what to do with some extra money. Right now, I have about $6,000 in a growth mutual fund that I invest in every month, and it has a sales charge of about 5%. And then I also have about $10,000 that I've saved up and I'd like to invest. So I'm wondering if I should open up another mutual fund or a Roth IRA, or maybe learn some more about investing and do it on my own online, or maybe do all those. I'm looking forward to your answer. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, first of all, stop putting money in that loaded mutual fund that has a commission. It's called a load. If you want to get a growth mutual fund, there's lots of them out there that have no loads. Vanguard has them. You could do an index. That's, you know, you can do ETFs. Don't have loads, and you buy it once, and it's a small commission. You're done to make the trade. But you don't have to pay a load. Load meaning commission, everybody, for a mutual fund. I would, you know, since you're 20, you want to be fairly aggressive, and I would probably just dollar cost average in that money, probably into an index fund. You know, that makes perfect sense to me. If you want to start by individual stocks, I think you have to learn more. You know, a lot of people say, well, I'm just going to go out and buy Apple. And they have no idea why they're buying it, or the numbers, or is it good, bad, difference. They have no idea what they're doing. And buying one or two or three stocks for a portfolio is high risk, no matter how good the stock is. So you probably, at this point, stay with mutual funds or indexes. And that, I think you'll be better served. When you get about, see, for me, when you get about between about $100,000, finally get to that level, then you can start building a portfolio of stocks. By that time, you'll have a lot more knowledge also, if you keep learning. So that's what I would suggest. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Tesla. What is a competition for Tesla? Okay, to be honest, there isn't any. In terms of luxury and performance, Tesla has no competition. Now, VW, Audi, and Porsche at the recent Frankfurt Auto Show, which is a big prestigious auto show in Europe, have concept cars. Audi's supposed to get 150 miles on a charge. That's no big deal. Porsche says they can get up to 350 miles on a charge, and they're working on a design to be able to charge the batteries in 15 minutes. Well, that sounds pretty impressive. But note that these are concept cars. They're not. Tesla's has cars out there on the road and has had them on the road. Tesla's coming out this month, September 29th. With our new Model X SUV this month. And about a couple of years from now, their model, was it? I think it's Model 3. I don't remember the name. They're going to come out. Well, that's the car that's supposed to be, you know, mass produced, about 35,000 for everybody. And let's say other car companies want to get serious, and I have a feeling that a lot of them don't really want to get too serious at this point. They'll wait till they get way behind Tesla, probably. Well, they're already way behind. 3-5 years behind Tesla, in my opinion. But when they do finally get their act together, they don't have the batteries. Remember, Tesla's building that big gigafactory, battery factory out in Nevada, just because they know that they'll probably need them. That battery factory they're building, they've been building for a year. It'll be done in a couple more years. And Tesla doesn't need all those batteries, not even a good portion of them. Those batteries are going to be sold to other industries as well as Tesla's cars. But Tesla is the only one thinking ahead enough to say, hey, I'm going to need those batteries. I'm going to need battery production out there. I don't know. I think there's no competition for Tesla. Now, maybe the competitors don't think they need to compete with Tesla. That's possible. But my gut feeling tells me that they're going to be playing catch up here in a couple of years when Tesla is a big auto company. This is not a recommendation to go out and buy their stock. I'm not talking about the stock. I'm talking about the company itself. What is it doing? And do they have any competition? And where's the competition? And there isn't any, really. Now, I know they got the Leaf out there. You got the Prius. You got the different kinds of cars. But all electric, high performance, high quality. Who? Name another one besides Tesla. You can't. There isn't any. Don't forget to use our very effective risk analysis tool on InvestTalk.com. We've integrated this technology into our management process. The Riskalyze Technologies was built upon academic Nobel Prize winning economics. So it's all very data driven approach to trying to figure out a client's risk appetite, trying to figure out how much risk you really want. And you can use it for free. For the free risk analysis tool, go to investtalk.com.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, yes, Steve. This is Dan in Menlo Park, California. Just had a quick question about Capital One Financial. Was thinking that credit cards, Visa, MasterCard, but particularly Capital One, might be a good investment, and wondered if you agreed or not at what the entry point might be or if I should wait. Thanks so much. Really enjoy your show, 1220 on the radio. Bye.
Capital One, COF, COF out of McLean, Virginia, provides consumer and commercial lending, credit card products, and automobile financing. They are growing their sales. The last three quarters, sales growth have gone up 4 or 5%. For the six quarters before that, sales were shrinking. So now they've turned around sales growth. Earnings are now going to start looking up. They're going to shrink to $7.20 this year. That's a 5% shrinkage from last year. But next year, they're going to grow 8%. Pays a 2.2% dividend, pretty low PE at 10. It's $73.56 stocks. And remember, they're going to make $7.80, so that PE will drop below 10 if the price doesn't move. It has fallen, just like the market. You know, before the market started weakening, and this stock was really doing well, it was beating the market for the year, up for the year, but then now it's not up for the year. It's pretty much flat. I think this is a pretty decent entry point. Again, I think we want to wait maybe a week or two to see how this correction plays out. I don't think in a big rush, but where it is at this price seems like a good price to me. That doesn't mean it won't go down. It can easily, but I'm just telling you, with a 10 PE. And is finally turning around on sales. It's not going to be a huge grower. It's not going to be a huge winner, but I think this is a good, decent entry point. But I still would be cautious. Okay, time for Invest Talk 101, a lesson in everyday investing. Okay, let's quiz you first. Everybody knows cold hard cash rules the market. Nobody pays more than they have to for a stock, right? So true value of a stock is determined by what people actually pay for a stock. Is that true or false? True value of a stock is determined by what people actually pay for the stock. Is that true or false? Now, this is a tricky question, really, because it's all about psychology. What is true value? What is the value of a company? When people call up and ask me, I can tell you based on historical values what it should be. But does that mean that's true? Isn't the value of the stock what you'll pay, someone else will pay for it? It's all about psychology. Psychology trumps logic. Okay, you need to track emotions of the market to understand what investors, when they're acting irrationally and mispricing assets, and rationally. And they get irrational all the time. It's a pendulum swinging back and forth, back and forth. Okay, so it doesn't mean stocks are cheap or expensive. It means that it's hard, that any one day or moment in time, people could be emotional about what they're paying for a stock. You as an investor have to step away from those emotions and say, you know, in the real world, what is a fair price for this? And how do you determine fair price? Well, you can compare it with other kinds of assets and what are fair price for them. Most, for instance, what is your return on a bond, a riskless bond, a 10-year U.S. Treasury bond? You take no risk. What's your return on that? Let's say the 10-year bond is paying 5%. And that, remember, no risk. And a stock has a potential on an average P ratio to go up 5% in the next 12 months. Of course, you would buy the bond for that 12-month period because there's no risk, whereas the stock has lots of risk. So you can see how you start getting into, well, what's a good value? What's something worth compared to something else? What's a value in relationship to other kinds of assets I could put my money in? It gets complex, as you all know. So it can be difficult. And, you know, for most people, it's probably they don't have the data or the information and the time to make these kinds of studies. But it is kind of important. If you want to talk more about figuring out investor psychology and what true value is of anything financial, give me a call. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Each month, Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners for informal retirement reviews on a first-come, first-served basis, and the next date is at our home office in Dana Point in Orange County on September 23rd. He'll be in Portland on the 25th for a limited schedule, then it's off to San Ramon on September 30th. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Schedule a Meeting. There's no cost or certainly no obligation. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Yeah, this is Joe in San Diego. I have a question. I just started a Roth because I need to start taking my retirement distributions because it would be tax advantageous for me to take them starting now. I am 65, and I'm putting them into a Roth, which is probably a good idea because I don't need the money. And I was wondering what kind of investments in the Roth would you suggest? Just basic stocks and dividends, yielding stocks, or should I put some bonds in there? But that's tax-free, so I wouldn't want to put a tax-free thing since the whole idea of the Roth is you're only taxed on the income. So I should probably get something like a high dividend-paying corporate stock, I would think. Please give me an answer. Thanks.
Now, of course, it goes to you're 65 years old. You said two things. You're 65 and you don't need the money. Okay, in that scenario, then you're probably looking for growth of that money, not income producing. Now, if I'm wrong, then you need to understand that the answer I'm giving you would be different. But if you don't need the money and it, you know, it's not something that you're going to ever need, and maybe that money's going to go to your next generation, then you probably want to buy growth growth stocks over the long haul. If you're looking for income, then you'd buy high dividend paying stocks that are undervalued and just hold on to them. Buying bonds, when you say they're tax-free, and I don't need to worry that. Well, not necessarily all. You're talking about municipal bonds and U.S. Treasuries. Well, corporate bonds are taxed, and you can buy those in your Roth because there's no tax treatment of theirs. There's no taxes on inside a Roth. So you can get better yields by buying high-quality corporate bonds. You know, so it's hard to answer that question other than I have to make some assumptions, and they are, as you pointed out, you don't need the money, and you want it to grow tax-free. Well, then I'd go with growth stocks. Growth stocks. Now, then it goes to, well, how much risk do you want to take? Now, when you're 65, maybe you don't want to take a lot of risk, even though you don't need that money. So then you can temper that growth focus and have growth and income with high dividend paying stocks, and maybe have some growth stocks in there. It's a tough answer. It's a tough question without getting more information from you, but I hope that helps you in some way. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're in the midst of a correction, right? The market was down almost 300 points today. The Dow was. So, and we know we are. We had that 4 or 5 day collapse in August, even though for the whole year the market has not done very well. We all know that. But we did have that 10%-ish collapse, 8-9%, not quite 10. And, it looks like we're the last couple days we're going back down for another downstroke it's okay. We should retest the lows. And this would be actually normal and expected. So my question to you is, how long do these corrections last? Is it weeks, months, days? Well, they've done some studies on that, and I'm going to share that with you when we come back. If you have a question about anything financial that you need answered, you need it answered now, I'm here. Give me a call. 888-99-TRIED. I'll try to help you as best I can. You're listening to Invest Talk.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. While we don't know exactly when the Fed will hike interest rates, investors need to have their eyes wide open about what could happen and what it means for bond markets. The Pre-Fed Hike Bond Playbook, that's our talking point for Monday's podcast. We hope you'll join us then.
888-992-4278. There has been a study about corrections. We're in the midst of a corrections. The normal frequency of declines. What is it? A study done by Capital Research and Management Company. And it went all the way back to 1900. 1900 to 2014 looked at all the declines. And they found that declines of 5% happened on a frequency of approximately 3 times a year. 5% down about 3 times a year. Declines of 10% or more occurred about once a year. Declines of 15% happened every 2 years, and a bear market decline of 20% or more every 3.5 years. Isn't that interesting? But what's more interesting is the length of time. If we're in the midst of a correction now, how long does it take for it to work its way out? They studied that too. Unfortunately, they only went back to 1965 on this one, though. They didn't go back far enough. Okay, looking back, all of the sub 10% declines bounced back almost instantly within a few days or week or two. So if it's real small, they bounce back. It's chatter. You really can't do anything about it. Okay, it takes, if you have something more significant, than that. It said here that The 2 15% declines differ. Well, I'm just trying to, all of the sub 10%, we know that. It takes about, I'm trying to get up, it took approximately 2 months to hit a bottom and 3 months to get to the highs or higher than it was before. Okay, so if it's a decent sized correction, it takes several months to work its way out. And it's very common not to be a V bottom. The small ones are very common to have V bottoms, small ones, not 10% or more. They're not V bottoms. Kind of interesting. I couldn't read all the numbers and everything on here, but it is interesting. And what about this current correction we're in? Well, they even talked about that. There is, of course, the possibility of a bigger bottom coming, but on the bright side, in previous cases, the real bottom was not much lower than the initial bottom. And that's what they think in this case. So, we got to test this bottom. Now, I ask you this. Where is the bottom? Remember that with that one huge day it fell and then closed? It fell all really hard and then came back during the day, intraday. Is the bottom of the intraday low or the close of that day? Because that's a significant difference. And I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But what I can say is chances are very good we're going to retest the bottom, whatever that bottom is. We're going to retest it. It's pretty common. The probability is that we're going to retest it. The possibility is maybe we won't. Right? That's the difference. We're now in September. October is known to be the bottom of a market somewhere. So not necessarily the worst month of the year, because it's not, August is, but is known to have put in a bottom in October and have a rally to the end of the year. Just so you know, that's doesn't always have to be true, though. Don't save your questions. If you have a question over the weekend, call our 24-hour listen line while you're still thinking about it. 888-99-CHART. Now you can reach me anytime. Oh, he was going to be about Disney, and I've just been instructed that I don't have enough time. I like Disney, just so you know. I do like Disney, but maybe we can pick up that call next time. I have 1 minute left, and I wanted to mention junk bonds. The junk bond market is not doing badly at all, except for one area, and that's in the oil patch. We're going to see a lot more defaults coming up in the oil patch. Because a lot of those shell oil producers use junk bonds to fund themselves. And those bonds are coming due. Before we close for the hour, there are many chart patterns that investors traders can use to identify likely moves in the market. We have some chart lessons if you'd like to learn more. These are available to all InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free at InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley on behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.